This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
I've seen a lot in my line of work. From routine burglaries to messy domestic disputes, you develop a thick skin, learn not to get rattled. But every so often, a case comes along that sticks with you. One that makes you question things you thought were just for scary stories. This is one of those cases. It was a Wednesday night, nothing remarkable about it. I was winding down my shift when dispatch called me up. They said a man, who I'll name Mark Davies to respect his privacy, had reported what sounded like footsteps coming from his attic. He'd already checked things out himself, but couldn't find anything, and he wanted an officer to take a look. Normally, calls like these don't make it my way. They're usually for patrol, but I was in the area and figured it was better than sitting around waiting to clock out. At worst, I'd have to chase out a raccoon or reassure Mr. Davies he was just hearing things. When I arrived, I was struck by how ordinary everything looked. Mark Davies met me at the door, a healthy, middle-aged guy, neatly dressed with a calm but slightly uneasy demeanor. He thanked me for coming and explained that the noises had started about a week ago. He wasn't the type to jump to conclusions, he told me, but it was getting harder to ignore. I asked if anyone else lived with him, just to rule out the usual suspects. Teenagers sneaking around or visitors who might have decided the attic was a good hideout. But he lived alone, he assured me, and he'd checked all the windows and doors multiple times. They were always locked. We walked through the house to the attic access in the hallway. It was one of those pull-down ladders that squeaks when you lower it, and I could feel the slight hesitation in his movements as he pulled it down for me. The attic access creaked open, and a stale, musty smell hit me as I climbed up, flashlight in hand. The air was thick, almost too thick, and everything felt strangely still. The attic was large, with exposed beams and insulation sticking out in clumps. Dust coated every surface, disturbed only by the faint marks of recent footprints. I followed the trail with my flashlight, squinting to make out the path. It led to a dark corner of the attic, partially hidden by a stack of old boxes. That's when I saw it. There, tucked into the corner, was a small setup, a kind of makeshift altar, if you could call it that. Half-burnt candles surrounded an overturned crate, their wax melted. On top of the crate, someone had arranged a strange collection of objects, a small bundle of what looked like animal bones, a rusted key, and a photograph of Mark. I hadn't noticed the photo at first, but as I drew closer, the flashlight beam hit it. The face had been scratched out, violently, like someone had taken a knife or some sharp object and gouged into the photo repeatedly. For a moment, I just stood there, staring. This wasn't just some squatter looking for a place to stay. This was something darker, something intentional. I looked around, suddenly aware of every sound, every creak. Whoever had set this up had been here recently, and the setup itself didn't feel like it was meant for good intentions. I called down to Mark, asking him if he'd ever been up in the attic before, if he had any idea how his photo had ended up there. He seemed genuinely baffled, even a little scared when I described what I was seeing. "Are you sure?" he asked, his voice strained. "That can't be possible. I don't know anyone who would do that." I took a few photos of the setup and told him I'd remove it, hoping it would help ease his mind. But the whole time, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was disturbing something better left alone. After packing up the strange items, I double-checked the attic, making sure there was no other way in, no hidden entrances or loose panels. Everything was sealed tight. Whoever had been there had somehow come and gone through the main house, slipping past locked doors and windows. It didn't add up. When I went back downstairs, Mark was visibly shaken. I tried to reassure him, telling him it was probably some prank and that I'd cleared everything out, but he didn't look convinced. Before I left, I told him to call if he heard anything else, no matter how small. He nodded, but I could tell he was already looking over his shoulder, as if he could feel something watching him. A few days passed, and I didn't think much about the case. I'd filed the report, logged the strange items, and moved on. But then Mark called again, late at night. He sounded rattled, his voice low and shaky. "They're back," he said, whispering. "The footsteps, they're back." I drove over, and this time, the tension was palpable. He met me at the door, looking pale, eyes darting toward the ceiling every few seconds. He told me he'd heard the footsteps again, just like before, as if someone was pacing above him. This time, though, he swore he'd heard faint whispers, a murmuring voice that seemed to come and go, fading in and out. We checked the attic again, but everything was just as I'd left it, empty, sealed. There was no sign of anyone, no new footprints in the dust. But the air felt heavy, thick with a kind of stillness that made the hair on my arms stand up. I'd seen nothing like it before, and I was starting to wonder if we were dealing with more than just a trespasser. I told Mark I'd keep the case open, that we'd monitor the area. But as I left, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was still there, hiding in the corners, watching us. A couple of weeks later, I got a call from the station. Mark had been admitted to the hospital.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
He'd been found in his bed, weak and barely able to speak, his once healthy frame gaunt and frail. His doctors couldn't find a physical cause for the sudden decline, but I knew something was wrong, something that had nothing to do with illness. As I sat down to review the case files, I felt a creeping unease settle over me. I kept going back to the altar, to that scratched out photo of Mark's face. The ritualistic setup, the way his health had plummeted, it felt like a warning, a message meant for him alone. The more I thought about it, the more convinced I became that whoever had set up that altar had intended to harm him in ways that went beyond the physical. After consulting with my superiors, we decided to launch a formal investigation. We couldn't ignore the possibility that someone had targeted Mark, that the person who had set up that twisted altar might be responsible for his decline. The investigation turned up nothing concrete, but that sense of dread never left me. It was back in 2017, and even now, when I think back on it, I wonder what really happened in that attic. What unseen force had taken hold in Mark's life? The case remains open, but in my mind, it's one of those that will never have a neat ending. In my 20 years on the force, I've had my fair share of unusual calls. The check on an elderly resident call is routine. Usually it's something small, like a neighbor getting worried because they haven't seen their friend around, or a family member who thinks grandma's hearing is going. But this call was different, and I felt it the moment I picked up the phone. It was late, somewhere around midnight. The dispatcher's voice was low, almost hushed, as she relayed the message. An elderly woman had called in asking for someone to come over because, in her words, he's back. She wouldn't say who, but insisted that he'd been visiting her at night, standing by her bed. There was something strange about the way she'd spoken, almost like she was afraid of saying too much. The dispatcher told me she'd sounded shaken and she wanted an officer, any officer, to come by. When I got there, I took a second to take in the house. It was small, well-kept, one of those quaint little homes with a garden out front and lace curtains in the windows. The lady answered the door. She looked frail, tiny in her nightgown, with silver hair pulled back into a neat bun. But her eyes were wide, darting back and forth as though she were looking for someone over my shoulder. "Thank you for coming," she said. "I didn't know who else to call. He's back again." I tried to keep my expression neutral, my tone calm. "Who's back, ma'am? Can you tell me a bit more?" She looked around, then motioned for me to come inside. I followed her to the living room. She sat down slowly, her hands trembling as she placed them in her lap. "It's my husband," she finally said, her voice wavering. He passed a few years ago. I know it sounds ridiculous, but he's been visiting me. Every night this past week, he stands by the bed, just looking at me. Doesn't say a word, just stands there, watching. Her words hung in the air, and I tried to gauge if this was some kind of grief-fueled delusion, or if she was simply lonely. But there was something in her eyes that made me pause, something haunted, almost desperate. I chose my words carefully. Sometimes when we miss someone, we might feel their presence, maybe even imagine they're there. She shook her head, cutting me off. "No, this isn't my mind playing tricks on me, officer. I know what I'm seeing." Her voice grew a little stronger, almost defiant. "He was here, right there, at the edge of the bed. I could feel him. The way he looked at me, it wasn't like him, not like the man I knew." That last part made the hairs on the back of my neck prickle. I knew it was my job to reassure her, to tell her that it was likely nothing, but the way she spoke, it got to me. I told her I'd keep an eye out, that she could call me anytime, day or night, if she felt unsafe. I tried to give her a comforting smile, but it felt flat, unconvincing. When I left, she stood by the door, watching me go, her gaze following me all the way to the street. I could tell she wasn't reassured, and I couldn't blame her. There was something about the way she'd looked at me, a strange mixture of resignation and fear, that left a weight on my chest as I drove away. The next day, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. So, even though I wasn't assigned to check on her again, I decided to swing by her house in the afternoon just to put my mind at ease. But when I arrived, I saw two other officers already there. The look they gave me when I walked up confirmed what I feared. The lady was dead. They found her in her bed, lying perfectly still, with a note placed carefully on the bedside table. The note was brief, just a few words scrawled in shaky handwriting. "He's here for me now." I stepped into the bedroom, my stomach twisted as I took in the scene. She lay there, eyes wide open, her face frozen in an expression I couldn't quite read. Was it fear? Resignation? There was something about it that felt unnatural, something that didn't sit right. I spent a long time looking at that note, those five words staring back at me like a warning. And the longer I looked, the more unsettled I felt. She had believed her husband was coming back for her, and in some strange, inexplicable way, it felt like she'd been right. For the next few days, I couldn't stop thinking about her. I'd go about my shift trying to focus, but her face, that note, kept coming back to me. There was a lingering sense of dread that I couldn't shake, like I'd missed something crucial, some piece of the puzzle that would explain it all. And then something strange happened. A week after the lady's death, I still couldn't shake the feeling that something was unresolved. her conviction that her husband had returned to visit her, standing by her bed each night, weighed on me. For reasons I couldn't quite justify, I found myself heading back to her house one last time, as if I needed to see it again to put the case to rest. The house was silent when I stepped inside, that heavy, unnerving kind of silence that feels like it's holding its breath. Everything looked as she'd left it, her knitting draped over the armchair, her reading glasses resting on a stack of old paperbacks, the faint scent of her perfume hanging in the air. When I reached her bedroom, I hesitated at the door, almost feeling like I was intruding on something. But I took a steadying breath and stepped in, looking around. Nothing was out of place. The bed was neatly made, her slippers still by the bedside. But as I stood there, something felt wrong. The air was colder than the rest of the house, and a strange weight seemed to settle around me, like I was being watched. I could feel a presence, something I couldn't see but knew was there. I scanned the room, telling myself it was all in my head, but that feeling wouldn't go away. It was as if someone was standing just out of sight, watching me. My heart began to race, every instinct telling me to leave. I took a step back, eyes on the empty space by the bed, the very spot where the lady had claimed her husband would stand. Without another thought, I turned and left, closing the bedroom door behind me, as if that could seal in whatever was lingering in there. As I stepped outside, I took a deep breath, the weight lifting instantly. And I couldn't shake the thought that maybe the lady had been right. Her husband, or what was left of him, hadn't left her alone, even in the end. I haven't gone back since. Some presences and some places are better left undisturbed. I've been a corrections officer for about 15 years now, and I like to think I've got a pretty good handle on what goes on in the place. The jail I work in is nothing special. Your standard county facility with dull, beige walls and the smell of antiseptic that clings to everything. It's quiet most nights, almost mind-numbingly so, especially if you're on the graveyard shift like I am. A lot of guys hate night shifts, but I like it. I enjoy the quiet routine of making rounds, checking cells, and staring at the monitors. You get into this kind of rhythm, knowing exactly where you'll be every hour, every half hour, and you get used to seeing the same things over and over. Nothing ever really changes here. But a few months ago, something did change, and I still don't have an answer for what it was. It started on a Tuesday night. I remember because that's when we do extra rounds to make sure no one's up to anything they shouldn't be. Just a little after 2 a.m., I was sitting in the control room looking at the monitors while finishing up some paperwork. Most of the inmates were asleep by then, with a few still lying awake, staring up at the ceiling. Nothing out of the ordinary. Then, on one of the screens, I saw something strange. Just a dark shape moving slowly between the cells in Block C. It was subtle, almost like a trick of the light, and at first I thought maybe it was just a glitch on the screen or a shadow from one of the passing cars outside. But the thing was, the shape wasn't moving like a shadow. It was shifting back and forth, almost like it was pacing, stopping every now and then near the bars before continuing on its path. I leaned in closer, watching it for a few more seconds, trying to figure out what I was seeing. It didn't make sense. There was no one else supposed to be there at that hour. So I did what I always do. I went to check it out. I grabbed my flashlight and walked over to Block C, my footsteps echoing down the empty halls. When I got there, everything was exactly as it should be. Inmates were sleeping. The hall was empty, and there was no sign of the shadow I'd seen on the monitor. I did a quick walk around the block, checking each cell, but everything was normal. Satisfied, I headed back to the control room, chalking it up to a late-night hallucination or some weird camera glitch. For the next few nights, I didn't think much about it. The routine went on as usual, and the shadow didn't make another appearance. But about a week later, it happened again. This time, it was around 3 a.m., and I was watching the monitors like usual. The shadow appeared on the same screen, drifting between cells, moving just slowly enough to catch my eye. I watched it for a few seconds, waiting to see if it would fade like last time, but it didn't. It kept moving, pausing now and then, almost as if it were looking in each cell. I went back to Block C a little faster this time, feeling a weird sense of urgency that I couldn't explain. When I got there, everything was still and quiet. No shadow, no movement. But something felt different, like the air was heavier and there was a strange smell, almost like old wood or dust. I checked each cell, shining my flashlight around, even looking up at the ceiling, but there was nothing there. Just silence, the hum of the lights, and the faint sound of an inmate snoring. As I headed back to the control room, I told myself it was nothing. Maybe I was just seeing things. After all, night shifts can mess with your head, and staring at those screens for hours can play tricks on your eyes. But when I settled back down, my eyes went right back to the monitor, as if expecting to see it again. Over the next week, things got weirder. Every few nights, I'd see the shadow again, always in Block C, always pacing slowly between the cells like it was searching for something. And every time I went to check, the hall was empty. No sign of anyone, no sign of anything. But each time I felt that strange, heavy air, that odd smell hanging around the block. I started asking some of the other guards if they'd noticed anything unusual, but they just shrugged it off, saying, I was probably just tired or stressed. I didn't push it, not wanting to sound paranoid, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. Then one night, the inmates started talking. I was making my rounds when one of the guys, a tall, lanky guy with a shaved head, stopped me as I walked by his cell. He leaned up against the bars, his eyes wide, almost frantic. Officer, did you see him? He whispered. See who? I asked, caught off guard. The man, he said, his eyes darting down the hall. He comes at night, just stands there, by the bed, watching. I brushed him off, thinking he was just trying to mess with me. Inmates love playing mind games, and I wasn't about to fall for it. But over the next few days, more inmates started mentioning the same thing. Different guys from different cells, all describing the same figure. A shadowy man who stood by their beds at night, staring at them while they slept. One guy who'd been locked up for nearly a decade swore he'd woken up to see the shadow standing inches from his face, leaning over him with those dark, hollow eyes. He looked shaken as he described it, his voice trembling, and this was a guy who'd seen it all, but something about the shadow had scared him in a way that I'd never seen before. At this point, I was starting to feel uneasy myself. The sightings became more frequent, and every time I saw that shadow on the monitor, a sense of dread crept up on me. I tried to rationalize it, telling myself it was just the inmates trying to mess with my head, that it was just a glitch on the camera. But the more I saw it, the harder it was to shake the feeling that there was something real about it. Then, one night, it got personal. It was around 4 a.m., near the end of my shift, and I was doing my last round. I walked down the hall in Block C, shining my flashlight into each cell, making sure everyone was accounted for. Everything was normal, quiet. But as I reached the end of the hall, I felt it. That strange, heavy air, that faint, musty smell that I'd come to associate with the shadow. I turned, and there it was, standing at the other end of the hall. I could barely make it out, just a dark shape, but it was there, standing perfectly still, watching me. I blinked, and it was gone, like it had just slipped back into the shadows. I finished my round in record time and went straight back to the control room, where I sat down and tried to get a grip on myself. But as I looked at the monitor, I saw it again. The shadow was back, moving slowly down the hall, stopping at each cell, just like before. Only this time, it didn't disappear. I watched, frozen, as it moved closer, coming toward the control room, stopping just outside the door. I couldn't see its face, couldn't make out any details, but I could feel its presence. It was standing right there, just on the other side of the door. I don't know how long I sat there, staring at the screen, waiting for it to go away. But eventually, it faded, dissolving back into the shadows, leaving me alone in the silent room. I still see it sometimes on the monitors, pacing through Block C, moving between the cells like it's looking for something or someone. And every now and then, one of the inmates will mention it, talking about the shadow that stands by their bed, watching them as they sleep. I try not to think about it too much, but every time I walk through that hall, every time I sit in the control room, I can't shake the feeling that it's still there. And part of me wonders if one day it's going to stop looking and finally find what it's been searching for. I never expected to be assigned to patrol a cemetery, and I can't say I was thrilled about it. Cemeteries don't exactly make for comfortable environments at the best of times, especially in the dead of night. But we'd had reports of vandalism lately, people messing around after hours, and the department was stretched thin, so I got the assignment. I told myself it would just be a quiet shift, checking the grounds, scaring off any punks if they showed up. In and out. I showed up around midnight, figuring I'd just take a quick walk through, mark it on my log, and head back to the station. As I parked near the entrance, the fog was thick enough that I could barely make out the headstones in the distance. The air was cold and damp. It's hard to explain, but there was something about that place that felt different as soon as I stepped out of the car. There was an old iron gate at the entrance, and as I walked through it, I could hear it creak behind me, echoing in the silence. My flashlight beam cut through the fog, illuminating the rows of headstones. I didn't want to admit it to myself, but I was uneasy, even a little on edge. I kept looking over my shoulder, expecting to see something moving behind me, but it was just me and the endless rows of stones. I started my patrol, weaving between the graves, scanning for any sign of movement. The fog was thick enough that I couldn't see more than a few feet in any direction. I tried to focus, reminding myself that it was just another shift, just a place like any other. But the feeling of being watched kept creeping up on me, like there was something just beyond the fog, out of sight, tracking my every move. After a while, I started to relax a little, convincing myself that the eerie feeling was just my mind playing tricks. But then, I saw something. I was walking down a row of headstones when I caught a flicker of movement out of the corner of my eye. At first, I thought it was just the fog shifting, maybe a stray animal, but then I saw it again. A figure moving slowly through the mist, barely visible but unmistakably human-shaped. "Hey," I called out. "This area's off limits after dark. Come on out." The figure didn't respond. It just kept moving, gliding between the headstones as though it hadn't heard me. I took a few steps closer, shining my flashlight in its direction, but it was hard to see through the thick fog. I could just make out the outline of a thin figure, moving with a slow, almost floating gait, disappearing behind one of the larger headstones. I hesitated. Part of me wanted to turn around and head back to the car to leave the figure to its own devices. But I had a job to do, and I couldn't let some trespasser think they could just wander around in a restricted area. I picked up my pace, following the figure, my footsteps crunching against the gravel as I walked. As I rounded the headstone where I'd last seen it, I expected to catch up, maybe give some kid a stern talking to before sending them on their way. But there was no one there, just rows of graves stretching out into the fog, silent and empty. I turned, scanning the area, trying to figure out where they could have gone. There was no way they could have moved that fast. It was like they'd just vanished into thin air. I kept looking, hoping to catch another glimpse, but the fog was thickening, and my flashlight barely cut through it now. The cemetery was dead silent, save for my own breathing and the light rustling of leaves in the distance. I told myself to keep going, that it was probably just a trick of the light or some punk hiding in the mist. But every nerve in my body was telling me to leave, to get out of there before something worse happened. I'd been in plenty of dark, eerie places, but this felt different. I continued on, half out of duty, half out of stubbornness. But as I walked, the sense of dread only grew stronger, settling over me like a weight. Every shadow seemed to stretch out toward me. Every flicker of movement out of the corner of my eye felt too close, too real. I could swear I was hearing faint footsteps, echoing softly, as though someone were walking just behind me. I turned around more than once, each time expecting to see someone standing there watching me. But there was nothing, just the thick, suffocating fog. I kept moving, my flashlight swinging back and forth, the beam catching on old, crumbling headstones, twisted tree branches, but no sign of the figure. Then I saw it again. This time, the figure was much closer, maybe 20 feet away. I could make out more details now, a dark, shadowy outline, tall and thin, with no discernible features. It was just standing there, facing me, unmoving. "Hey!" I called out again, my voice sounding strange in the silence. "This area is off limits." Nothing. The figure didn't react, didn't even move. It just stood there, watching me, though I couldn't see any eyes, any face. I took a few steps forward, feeling a chill that had nothing to do with the night air. Then, without a sound, it slipped behind another headstone, disappearing into the mist. I'd had enough. My gut was screaming at me to leave, to get back to my car and drive away. But part of me still wanted to know what or who I was dealing with. I walked over to where the figure had been, shining my flashlight over the graves, looking for any sign of movement. But again, there was nothing. I stood there for a long moment, listening to the silence, feeling the cold seep into my skin. I could feel something watching me. Something just out of sight, hidden in the mist. It felt like I was intruding on something I didn't understand. Finally, I turned to leave, my footsteps quickening as I made my way back to the entrance. But just as I reached the gate, I heard a faint whisper, so soft I almost missed it. It was coming from somewhere behind me, from the depths of the cemetery. "Leave." I didn't look back. I pushed through the gate, feeling an overwhelming sense of relief as I stepped onto the pavement. I walked straight to my car, started the engine, and didn't look back until I was a mile down the road. My hands were shaking as I gripped the wheel, my mind racing with everything I'd seen or thought I'd seen. I told my supervisor the next day that I didn't want to do another cemetery patrol, and thankfully, they didn't ask questions. I don't know if they would have believed me anyway. I'm not sure I even believe myself. But one thing I know for sure is that something was out there that night, something I don't want to understand. Some places are better left unpatrolled. And that cemetery, well, I hope I never have to go back there again. If these police horror stories left you on edge, hit that like button and subscribe for more real-life chills. Don't forget to share the scare with a friend who loves a good thrill. Which story did you find the most unsettling? Drop it in the comments. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And remember, even those who protect us aren't immune to the unknown. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From Stars, Stripes, and Snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at MinkyCouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar. The better tasting, more refreshing zero sugar cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.